All right, let's move on to the next question. This is my podcast, and I'm taking control again.
This is the Crit RPG Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything Lit RPG, Progression Fantasy, and Royal Road.
Yeah.
All right. Hi, and welcome to the Crit RPG Podcast. Today, with my great friend,
Haylock!
Woo! Hit me with the... Wait, what are they? Hit me with the trumpets again. One more time.
Okay. My good friend, Haylock!
Yeah, that's the energy I need.
Perfect. There we go.
Ready to go.
This is fun. So, you might be asking yourself, why did he invite Haylock again? Isn't that the guy that you recorded with a terrible microphone? And to that I would say yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. I have been gang-pressed into doing this.
Yeah, I actually invited myself because it struck me as criminal that Max hadn't been interviewed himself.
Yep.
And so he can't interview... I mean, he could interview himself, but, you know, that could be a bit odd. Though maybe me interviewing is even odder, but we're going to find out today.
It's a bit masturbatory, isn't it?
It is, yes.
I think a phrase I will be using throughout the entirety of this episode will be, I'm the one asking the questions.
Yeah. I should have had something installed on your side to just like smack you every time. Although, it's a weird dynamic because it's like, I don't know what I'm doing. So at some point, you'll need to take charge, but also I'm in charge and I'm asking the questions. So there's a bit of a switch dynamic. There's a back and forth.
Oh here. My God. This is now an After Dark podcast.
Yeah, we'll get there. We're working on it.
All right. So, well, go on.
All right. Okay. Hey, I'm the one giving directions today. Okay.
Yeah, you wish.
So what I wanted to talk to you about is Torchbearer. So how and why did you write this story?
Do you have an hour?
Yes, I do.
So most of my stories used to be other stories that then turned into other stories. If I'm studying at Adam and Eve, I was in college in 2011. I was doing my international year and I was in the United States of America in Michigan and Kalamazoo. And I was doing this class with this wonderful guy called Andy Mozina, who I learned nothing from because I was dumb and arrogant and stupid at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds like a college student.
Yeah, I thought I would go in there and they would all be wowed by my writing knowledge, and they weren't. And I was like, okay, this is fine.
Were you like that student standing up like, well, actually?
Oh, God, don't mind. Yeah, anxious?
Maybe a little bit. That's all right. We were all young.
I would like to think that I wasn't like that, but I definitely didn't understand the whole like learning thing. Mm-hmm. I just did stuff, and then sometimes it was good and sometimes it wasn't, like, you know, highly gifted kids bingo. Like, you start shit and then it's good or you just quit.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I've always loved writing. So I wrote this story for that class where it was about a gigantic plague petrifying humanity. And then at some point, God, like capital G God, comes down and says, I'm so sorry, I fucked up. Everyone gets a free wish. Sorry. And they all had like their free wishes. And because I was a 22-year-old angsty kid, I thought I would write about this outsider who wished for something really cool. And all the others would just wish for money and fame and all that kind of stuff. And because they didn't understand this stuff, they would like all pack all the outsiders onto this small island kind of utopia paradise slash thing. Mm-hmm. And the main plot of it was guy wants to escape, but then when he can escape, he finds out actually, like, why would I want to go back? Why would I want to go back to the grind, to the money, to the fame? I mean, if I can just be here and like change into animals, because that's what I find fun.
That sounds way better.
Yeah, but I wrote it terribly. Yeah. It was supposed to be a short story, and I, yeah. if people already have read Torchbearer, they will understand. I can't. I literally can't write short stories. No, like my short stories are incredibly flat because I feel like I'm rushing through them because I just don't know how to stop a plot. And then if I don't do that, I write like 150,000, 160,000 words, word beefs.
Yeah. Well, in the genre you're writing now, that's sort of a benefit. So congratulations.
Yes.
Well done.
It felt like coming home. Yeah. It's literally like you don't need to edit. You just put stuff out there and you hope for the best. That didn't work out for me so well, but on the first Torchbearer Alpha. So yeah, everyone who read that, thank you so much for reading that. I'm very sorry I put you through log 3.16. I'm very sorry. For the people who haven't read it, it's a 30,000 word fight scene. So
yeah, people are very, very opinionated on those. I've seen recently a few people lashing out at the long fight scenes.
It's one of those fight scenes that makes Travis Baldry go, fuck you, I'm going to write my own book.
yeah. Like if he hadn't already reached that point already, if he had narrated Torchbearer, he might have gotten there.
Yeah, he will never narrate Torchbearer. Torchbearer is a female MC. Like female MC, kind of sci-fi story with a really confusing plot and some POV changes because I really didn't want any success on Royal Road. That was my goal when I wrote the story.
Yeah, you definitely hit like, I think that's the trifecta. Actually, no. I mean, that's leaving out like harem elements. That is pretty unpopular.
Those are in there too, in book two or three.
Oh, yeah. So what, the quad factor? Yeah, you hit it. Yeah. Yeah. So you've got the female MC, sci-fi, point of view change.
Yeah, there really aren't any POV changes and there's not going to be a harem. But yeah, I don't really want to go into it because I'm afraid I will lose even more readers before I even start it.
We can worry about that when we arrive there.
If you're reading this, like if you're already read the thing, you kind of know where this is going and it's not that bad. But yeah, so I wrote that crappy short story. Mm-hmm. And then when I came back home a few years later, I was like, I always stopped writing and I started again and I stopped and I started again. And a few years later, I thought like, hey, NaNoWriMo sounds fun. I have no idea how I got there. And I wanted to write an urban fantasy novel. And so I had this idea of, well, taking this plot of, because this really interests me, of God screwing up and giving everyone a free wish. And I wanted to write a comedy. So I wrote a comedy where it's a plane full of people. And the pilot was supposed to die yesterday, but they forgot. So now they're killing him with like a stork through the windshield. And then the plane crashes into the Atlantic and everyone dies. And now they have this issue because there's rules and regulations. So you can't just kill people if you're angels. That's just not how that works.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
So they go into the rule book and they go like, shit, now we have to give everyone a free wish. Fuck. So what do we do? Last time we did that, we had all these new religions popping up and all the like 70s cults. So how about we don't do that anymore? So we need to give them a free wish. That's in the rules. But it doesn't state anywhere that we can't put them into like life-threatening situations right after so they die.
Oh, very ethical.
We don't kill them. Technically, so these are like new intern angels, right? Three people have prayed to them ever, and they're like, yeah, we can do it. This is cool. We're gonna get a big promotion for this. And then they put all the people in like life-threatening situations. And it turns out if you put humans in a situation where they are about to die, they wish not to die, right? So most people just wish like, I wish to get out of here. And then they get out of here, and then they like zap their brain, make it forget everything, and everything's fine. Yeah,
they're alive, wish gone.
Wish gone, yeah. About like 60, 70 people on that plane, however, they are a little bit smarter, or maybe they weren't in the right mind space, or like high. I have one character in another book that I wrote where the main character was high and just wished to be one with nature. But so the main character of this book that I was writing, the urban fantasy, Michaela or Mike, grew up in a kind of Christian, like ultra-conservative murder cult. And I mean, like, I'm treading a very fine line here with the whole like Christianity thing. One of my main characters or like side characters in Torchbearer is, well, de facto Muslim. So, I mean, I'm a Christian dude. I'm just doing my shit. And I've always been fascinated by injecting topics of Christianity into my books or faith in general. Even though I'm not a very religious person, I just think the whole concept is fascinating and how it shaped humanity. But that's a different topic. So
yeah, that is very interesting.
Mike, she was supposed to be this Stepford wife kind of person in this town. And she fled because she wanted to find her father. And her father has gone missing, hunting vampires. And her father always told her, if anything goes wrong, you can find me in Berlin. And that's where she went when the plane crashed. And she's like put in front of this truck and she was just, man, I wish I could react fast enough. right? That's her wish. And yep. everything slows down Matrix style. And now she has exactly enough time to make a decision and get out of trouble. Depending on how hard it is to get out, she gets more time, but she still needs to make the decision, right? So she can fuck up. She can make the wrong decision. And she just has exactly the right amount of time. That's her wish. Mm-hmm. And it was supposed to be a comedy, and I wrote it. And of course, the place that her dad sends her to is a vampire house. So she has to team up with this vampire and like the werewolf cook, and it's really fun.
Yeah, I can see the comedic beats.
Yeah. After a while, I realized, actually, this is not a comedy that I'm writing. And also, the vampire is far more interesting. So I had 55,000 words, and I canned them.
Yeah.
Canned them, and I wrote a new story. Like, again, comedy, vampire. I wrote the entire thing from the vampire's point of view. That crashed and burned too because it wasn't a comedy. So I threw that out. Another 65,000 words gone.
All experience though. It's something.
Yep. And then I wrote a book called The Flower, the Wish, and the Blood. Mm-hmm. It's from Valerie's point of view. Valerie's the vampire. Valerie Justine Claudette von Dahl. That's her, like...
Yeah, that's a name.
That's a really, really cool name, yeah. And she's the heir to this vampire house, the House of Dahl, which means valley in Old German. It's a whole thing. I did research. And the thing is, her dad is also missing. That's the thing that connects her to Michaela and that's the thing they bond over. But her dad is in vampire prison because they pinned all sorts of like, you know, like Nazi regime crimes on him to like wash their hands off of it. And they just put him in vampire prison in the 80s or late 80s, shortly after Valerie was born. And well, her mom left her on the doorstep because she didn't want to have a vampire kid. And she grows up normally until, of course, she gets into an accident and then drinks blood and then fully becomes a vampire and then no longer ages and has to like stay out of sunlight and all that kind of stuff. Mm. But the issue is her house without the air proper is falling apart. So the house that she's living in is falling apart, and also her reputation is falling apart. They tie together. They're metaphorically connected. And she gets this girlfriend called Florette, or Flo for short, and she's a fairy princess who is like kind of a big deal in Berlin, and they get together, and Florette was like, yeah, you got to push. You can do this. You can become bigger. You can become better than this. I can help you. I can help you. I must help you. I will help you. And Valerie gives in and says like, okay, cool. I can do this. I can make my house big again and like win my father back out of prison and clear his name. That's my duty. I can do this. And the book starts when they are going to a, well, semi-job fair for all these people who were on the plane. Remember at the beginning? who had wishes? Yeah. They go to this job fair because like Mr. Lichterfeld, you can guess who that is doing his job fair because he's like handling all the affairs of the mortals and he's big on like free choice. And he is like, these people, if we don't give them a job, the whole underworld is going to hunt them down. So I want them to connect it to houses so that they don't get hunted down. And Valerie kind of goes in and she gets the dregs of the dregs because she's late and she gets Michaela. And then stuff happens about that's the entire thing. Okay, so what does it have to do with Torchbearer? Well, I wrote that book and it was bad. It has very good bones, but it was terrible. So I quit writing again for another 4 years. And then when I started writing on Royal Road 2 years ago, very sporadically, just like one chapter every half year whenever I wanted to, I thought, hey, you know what? How about I write this other story that I still have in mind? Well, I've been talking for a while now. Sorry, this is kind of awkward.
No, you're good. Go. I'm listening. You're answering another question.
And so during this college time, I had like 6 or 7 ideas that I have written down and I still want to write. And one of them was a story about a young boy who lives in this dystopian, war-torn world on a different planet in the future. It's sci-fi. And he finds a hover tank in a cave. And inside of the hover tank is an AI, and that AI has been modeled after his mother, his dead mother. But like 30 years old, so she doesn't know him. and right, so that kind of thing. And yeah, had this like really cool action scenes planned. It was like assembly plans, but the book never really took off because it was supposed to be this coming of age, I don't need my mom anymore story, but I didn't really want to write it. But I found again that the AI character is way more interesting. What does it feel like if you're stuck in a computer and there's a huge time gap? The last time you did this, you were actually winning a war. And now you're...
Yeah, you're just a copy of a frame, like space and time.
Or are you the real person? Are you not, right? You don't know because you feel real to yourself. And so I took that idea and I just wrote the beginning of that. So I had this character called Chris and I put him in and I put Samantha in. And the book wasn't really supposed to be an isekai at the beginning anyway. And then I wrote the first chapter and I was like, actually, this could be a really cool isekai. What about if this main character had already been isekai'd once and then did all the hero journey and did the heroine's journey, had all this cool stuff, built a community. And then at the end, she lost it all. And now she wants revenge and builds his AI. Mm-hmm. And what about if she actually maybe or maybe even not really gets stuck in the computer? If it really is her, what if we don't know as a reader? And that's how I started Torchbearer. It's the general plot. Main character got isekai'd. Sam has the power to advance technology. So out of a stick, she can make a spear. Out of a spear, she can make a lance. Out of the lance, she can make a primitive rifle maybe or something like that. As long as the concept is connected to what she wants to achieve, she can pump her wish energy into it and that thing will change into something else. The only limitations are if she can't imagine it, she can't do it. And the further you go away from the original object, the harder it is to do. So if you want to turn a stick into a laser rifle, it's going to be very hard and it's going to take weeks.
Yeah.
That's the idea. And so she saved up all the energy, builds a cool laptop for Chris. They sit down, connected to the laptop. That's where the book starts with all the senses coming into play. Mm-hmm. And then she presses the button and everything goes dark. And suddenly there's like error messages. And someone's trying to download some sort of virus onto her.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where the book starts.
The cold open, yeah.
If you are a friend of the Kazoo ad, you have to be very, very strong now. I regret to inform you that Sherloon went and bought the tier that removes the Kazoo ad from all podcasts. And now it's just gone. So you got Sherloon to thank for that. On the other hand, if you want to add the Kazoo ad again, there's a tier for that too. Thanks so much for listening, and let's get on with the show.
Yeah, well, I can see how you get the energy to write it, because it's, I don't know, it's a merging of so many ideas, and like, especially on, it's like ideas from past projects you've worked on, or ideas from past projects as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's super cool. I'm very excited to see the relaunch personally, but I suppose I'll have to wait like everyone else. What a shame.
I mean, it's not like I haven't been posting chapters of it on the Discord.
Yeah, I know, right? Crazy. Wherever could I find them?
Yeah, well, in case you're wondering, I have a very small circle of friends called Crit RPG, and this whole podcast actually started as me having burnout-ish, like mini burnout, sitting in a spa, sitting by the pool, reading a book and putting it down like the cat and the meme going like, I should do a podcast. And
hang on a second.
Yeah, actually, I thought like, hey, how cool would that be? I mean, I've done a podcast before. Just a role-playing thing for friends, not under my name. Just a small thing. And it would be really cool if, for example, I could get host on and talk to host. But then host said, I'm too shy. Senpai, no, Yubaka you. His real words, actually, he said that.
You can quote him.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. He called me a sassy baka and...
Tsundere host.
Yeah, them tsundere host, yeah. And then he kind of inflicted that curse on you. So you were my first guest, and here we are.
And my Australian ass was like, let's go! I'm down. I want to talk to you anyway. I'm all about it.
Yeah, it was fun.
It's so funny. Yeah, I remember I received a message. He's like, I'm sorry if I sent that your way and you don't want it. I was like, oh, I already agreed, man. I'm in. Hilarious. All right, from there, I was going to ask you, What's your best advice you ever got as a writer? What was it?
Quit.
Oh.
No, actually, it's advice I couldn't really handle at the time. It's advice I didn't know what to do with. I was always one of those anxious people who wanted to be like super prepared before they started anything so that they don't fail, right?
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler alert, that doesn't work. There's no way around failure. You got to be okay with failure because that's a superpower that you got to have.
That's where the growth comes from.
I'm getting there. So the one guy who left me a 2.5 star review, I really appreciate that. Like, I really do. But it still hurt my feelings. No, I love to hate that review, and I enshrined it and printed it out, because the problem with that is it was like, it was gut-wrenching, but it's also true.
Yeah, he hit the insecurities right.
Yeah, yeah. Very good points. Yeah. And that's like, you can't just dismiss that.
No, yeah, that's the most brutal feedback.
Exactly. So, no, the advice I actually got or took was from, I forgot his name. He wrote Hand Me Down World. Which is like a very interesting book. Like, it's not a little RPG at all. Like, it's a like very literary book. Lloyd Jones. He's a New Zealander, actually.
So he told you to quit writing?
No, he didn't.
Specifically?
He actually told me, like, all this preparation, all this like education that you're getting, you don't need it. All you need is the desire to write. And I still have that. He wrote this in his dedication in the book. Just have a desire to write. And I think that's pretty much the only thing that really matters. But I know that everyone is giving this advice because I've been hosting this podcast for a while. So for real, for craft, my advice that I would give is find friends who you trust to like you, even when they completely crush your work.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the way we're communicating on CritRPG on our Discord, I'm very happy about that. I'm very happy I met you guys, and I'm very happy that I'm part of this community that actually allows us to, well, grow together, right? I mean, look at Sean.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I couldn't agree more about that advice. Yeah, it's finding people that I think also receive something about receiving critique from people that you trust and love, you know, like it hits different. There's no subconscious part in your lizard brain like pushing it away saying like, no, they're wrong, they're wrong. Like, for people that you trust and you know have your best intention, like have the best intentions for you in mind and want you to succeed, when they hit you with it, with feedback, like it strikes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It takes hold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, like, it makes it safe. Yeah. So you're scared about the feedback. You don't waste like 30% of your brain energy trying to fend off anxiety or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Even for giving advice, advice is so hard. Even when I first joined, my general, you know, my dogma was to only give good advice, like only hit the things I liked, like don't kick an artist down. In the months since then, I think that was doing people a disservice.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And if I hadn't felt comfortable with the people I was in a group with, then maybe I wouldn't have had that realization. I would have just been like, just be nice to people, be a wholesome impact on everyone that comes across you. But, you know, for people that are truly trying to improve the craft, which I think every single one of us is genuinely like trying to improve and get better. You know, I want the advice that hurts. As much as it sucks to read, like, that's what I want. I want, like, it's already helped me so much. Like, when I'm writing new chapters, I'll write a sentence and I go like, oh, that's what X said at X time.
Yes.
I'm doing it again. Stop. You know what I mean? Like, that's so helpful.
Yeah. It helped me with the plotting. Torchbearer Alpha, very much just continues like slap, 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 slap. No sequels, only scenes. It was fun to write because something always happened and drove the character forward. The plot just drove itself. But you gotta have some sequels. You gotta have time for your character to actually process what's going on. Because even though it only happens in the book in the span of a few hours, in the real world, it's months. So you gotta slow down. Even if it doesn't really make sense for the characters, like there's a battle and they're like talking for two pages.
Yeah.
If you're reading it, if it's done well, it's okay, I think.
Yeah, no, I also think it's important. It's a weird thing. And like, this could be going down like a craft rabbit hole. But it's, you know, like you said, the epitome of it is being in like a battle and everything's crazy. But it's still a better experience for the reader to have this moment of introspection from the characters, like this, just a little bit of calm, a little downtime for their brains, like, and your characters to touch base and just like reset. And then whoop, we go right back into the chaos. It's obviously like a story by story basis, but yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Otherwise, people aren't connecting to your main character. I will be super thankful to Brooke from Portal, who I called yesterday and I spoke to, and who gave me like 20 minutes of like really good advice on my story and basically just reaffirmed what I thought anyway. I wish I had recorded that because my ADHD brain kind of forgot what he said. And I was like, I know what you want to... What was that thing? But yeah, I really appreciated that from him. And it was mostly, it was about, if you don't show who the main character could be under all the stress, then it's very hard to relate to them.
Yeah.
And so the finding this balance is super important, right? So you have your main character who has a lot of stress, but you also need to show, hey, what happens when they're not always angry? Why would you want them to be your friend?
And who are they truly when they're not, you know, in a life and death battle the entire damn time for 30,000 words?
And Brooke spoke about a book that they hadn't signed that was a little bit depressing. And the feedback that he got from his beta reader that sorts stuff out was one line that stuck with him. And that was, at some point, I just wanted the monsters to win so it would be over. And I have to say, I hope it's okay to say this, Brooke, but I have to say, like, this was in a book that was otherwise perfectly written, wonderful, beautiful prose, but it had the same issue that my book has, where it's just one constant barrage of emotion, right?
Yeah.
So
just bang, bang.
Yeah. I mean, I have been that friend. I have been like super depressed, who's always sitting around just moping, like, oh, my life sucks so hard. And if you are in that position, you literally cannot think of something else. Like, it's impossible. Mm-hmm. It's the worst affliction you can have in life, I personally feel, because it suddenly feels as though anything you do has no meaning whatsoever.
Yeah, there's no hope.
Yes, it's exactly.
Yeah.
And writing that is surprisingly easy, but it's tough as nails to read, and you don't want to read it because you don't want to be in that space. So you have to have some sort of redeeming factor. The other thing is true too, though. If your character always just succeeds, or if it's a cozy fantasy that is just cozy all the time and no tension happens ever, there's no challenge, that also gets numbing after a while. It's the chemicals in your brain, right?
Because
if you're reading a book, ideally, you suspend your disbelief so much that you live in that character's head and body and you get all these emotions. And that's what makes humans human. And that's why storytelling exists. That's why I call history history, because everything is a story. This is how we evolve as humans. We talk to each other. We connect. We communicate. And we do that because our brains are made so that when I tell a story and I do it well, you learn from it. If I tell, I was scared because it was a saber-toothed tiger and I was running for my life and I felt really anxious, then you also feel anxious and you learn a saber-toothed tiger is not a good thing. I should run away from that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So this translates then to stories these days. If you're like watching a superhero movie or whatever, you're getting all these different emotional beats. And the amount of chemicals in your brain is limited. There's DRANs, there's adrenal glands, dopamine glands, and so on and so forth. And they get empty after a while. Have you ever laughed so much that it began to hurt?
Yep, absolutely.
Right? And that's because the dopamine that gets like pushed out when you're laughing is a finite resource. And when that stops masking the pain of your muscles contracting, that's when it starts hurting.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I never made that connection.
And that's when you want people to stop telling jokes after a while because it hurts. It actually fucking hurts.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you got no more dopamine numbing the senses. That's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way. So if you stick with the same tone for too long and we're not bouncing around and exploring other things, you're just, if you're in an action sequence the whole time, you're epinephrine or adrenaline, I think they're the same thing, it runs out and you're just like, I'm good. You know what I mean? Like, it becomes a chore. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I hadn't thought of it from the brain chemical side of things. I just thought of it as a, like, you get bored sort of after doing the same thing for too long.
All right. Yeah.
That was a fantastic answer. The best guest I've ever had on this podcast. I haven't had a better answer to that podcast. I mean, that question. It's been a long day.
Wait, what? my brain does not compute. Excuse me?
Yeah. Okay. So I meant to say, because I'm infinitely funny, that your answer to that question I asked was the best answer that I've had to that question on this entire podcast.
Mm.
You know, implying Thank that you. I've interviewed a lot of people. You know,
yes.
I find that jokes get funny when I explain them. So
for those of you who don't know, I'm German. So that sounds like a very true statement. Yes.
Yeah. And I'm Australian. So there's been quite a few times when I've just like railed something out at you and you're like, wait, what? And I was like, oh, sorry, that was Australian for this. My bad.
basically, every sentence that starts with struth or crikey, I'm like, okay, cool. I can just zone out and then ask for clarification later.
Yeah. Sorry, can you repeat that in English, please? And thank you. Oh, hilarious. All right.
I feel like Siri.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the next question. This is my podcast and I'm taking control again.
Yeah.
What is one thing that you learned while writing that you would love to go back and improve on in older works?
Yeah, you got to like iron it a little bit in more. The segues are a bit harsh.
This is my podcast. All right. I'm Australian. I don't know social norms and we're making it work.
Yeah. So sorry, what was the question? No, I'm kidding. But one thing I could go back to. I know these questions from somewhere, I just don't know where. I
count them.
I think I would go back and I would keep writing.
Mm-hmm.
So when I wrote Flower, Wish and Blood and I got very anxious about it, I would just go back and not stop writing and I would throw this shit out on Railroad way sooner had I known Railroad existed. Get yourself a friggin' like bad pen name. Make it a pun or whatever. Just don't do what I did. Don't use your online persona. Let's make a throwaway account and just post a story. See if people like it. Set your goals low, like criminally low. Like if I get 5 readers for every chapter that I write, I'm doing something right. That was my first goal. I got them and I was like, awesome, cool. Let's see if they stay for 5 chapters. They did. I was like, but maybe how about 10? Because at this point, I was at 50. I was like, okay, cool. 10 is good. And then 50. So having low expectations and then surpassing those is way better because it keeps you going. All right. So set your goals very low. To this day, when I open a Railroad in the morning, check my stats, I close my eyes and I go like, how many people do I want to have read my chapter until now, the latest one? And so like, 5. And then I look and it's 10. I'm like, yes. If I had gone, oh, I hope it's 100 and then it's only 10, I would be like, oh man, I'm bad.
Yeah.
So yeah, like set low expectations and surpass them constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So set the expectation not to succeed, but to be validated for your work. It sounds super weird, but that's the advice I would give to my younger self. And for writing itself on the book, for Torchbearer, definitely sequels. Like, you know, scene in a sequel, the scene is where the action happens, the sequel is where the thinking happens. Write more sequels. Like, Samantha, give the poor girl some breathing space. Yes, she's angry all the time, and that's her main characteristic. Okay, cool. Yeah, we get it. But take a moment, right? Take a moment and maybe also explain this a little bit more because you're not fucking Fitzgerald or Grant. Like all these illusions go over people's heads and maybe they're not that smart to begin with. So sometimes just state what's happening.
First of all, how dare you? Yeah. All of my readers are so intelligent and they get everything every time.
Are they intelligent enough to click the subscribe button on your Patreon?
Some of them.
There you go. Those are the 500 IQ people. Speaking of which, if you're listening to this, there's bonus material for every single episode of this podcast on Patreon. I cannot stress this enough. And when I say bonus material, it's ad-free. It's uncut. So you can, for example, listen to Void Herald give love advice. You can listen to Raven's Dagger completely demolish Rhaegar, which is okay, by the way. We spoke to both of them. We were having some fun. You can listen to all the raunchy and really fun jokes that I couldn't put into the main show. So yeah, go ahead. Click that link. It's only $5, and that's like $1 per 2 hours of bonus content. So I think that's a pretty freaking good deal.
I'm subscribed. Why aren't you subscribed?
See, Haylock subscribed.
Yeah.
He subscribed, and he even subscribed after he got on the show, so it wasn't a bribe.
Yeah, that's true.
There you go. Yeah.
Speaking of smooth segues, that was a good one. You've been practicing.
Thank you.
That was nice. You didn't just screech at me?
No.
Yeah,
did I screech at you?
Oh, no, I did to you. Like 10 minutes ago. Oh, maybe I should have gaslit you and told you that never happened.
Please don't.
What? No. My transition was smooth.
Yeah, I'm very susceptible to that kind of shit, so please don't. I'm very naive.
All right. Sorry, I was just joking. Yeah. Oh, hilarious. Yeah, I totally agree with your writing advice, though. Setting expectations, I think that's the biggest reason why people quit. And quitting writing is like, I don't know, man. Even if you don't make money from it, or if you don't go full-time, or whatever grandiose goal you have, it's such a good hobby. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a healthy thing. It's such a fun thing for me anyway. If you, this is like, it's a weird lesson to have learned from playing video games, but I learned from my competitive League of Legends days that you improve far better if you stop focusing on winning. This is directly correlating to writing. If you focus on winning a game of League of Legends, when you lose, you get mad, you get tilted, you feel like shit, and you don't improve. You don't look at what you could have improved. You're just raging. You're getting mad at your teammates and blaming them. If you're a writer, you're getting mad at readers and blaming them. Like, if your goal is to instead improve and get better, that's why you're writing, because you're trying to improve and get better. You'll improve and get better, and you'll make better stories way faster than if your goal is to make X amount of money or to make this amount of followers or whatever. Because if you miss those things, you're going to rage out. You're going to feel terrible. Make improvement your goal.
Yeah, exactly. And this goes back to stoicism. I'm not like a staunch stoicist or something like that, but I do think there's a certain helpful element to understanding what's in your control and what's not. Setting your own expectations is in your control. Winning in a game where you need four randos to have more than two brain cells drop together, god damn it, is not, right? Yeah. So I completely agree with you. I'm not a very angry person in general. I write that all on the page in general when I can. The League made me rage. And that's mostly because you got this idea of, if everyone only did what I thought was right, then I would have success. But you forget that you are the person who defines what success is. And if any of you are listening to this and you're thinking like, oh, well, Maddox, he lives in his fucking mansion and he has Mai Tais with Shirtaloon on his fort yacht every weekend. No, I don't.
Wait, what? You don't?
No, I don't. He lives in Australia. That's you, Haylock. That's you who we're thinking about. We're taking this we're taking this like switch too much. You're the person who has Mai Tais with Shirtaloon.
Yeah, I'm more of a mocktail kind of guy, but you don't know. I could be.
He doesn't.
It's not my yacht. It's not my yacht, but I could be on Shirtaloon's yacht. You don't know. I'm on the beach. He could roll up.
You got a grappling hook. It's possible.
Yeah, I can swim.
I don't even know if Shirtaloon has a yacht. He doesn't seem a yacht guy.
He could have a yacht.
Yeah.
He has the ability. He probably maybe has the ability. I don't know. I don't know Shirtaloon. I've never spoken to him.
Yeah.
This is all conjecture.
Me neither. But yeah. Again, I'm like, before anyone takes it out of context, I was joking, right? I don't know if Shirtaloon has a yacht. I know he bought a house, and I'm super happy for him because he's the guy who literally brought this entire genre to where it is today. He had lots of help, of course, even people who shall not be named, like people with like weird copyrights, for example. They did their job, right? They did a lot of work to push this genre to where it is. And if they hadn't written good books, we wouldn't be here today. So I'm really grateful to all of them. Their success is amazing. And I don't want it to have any less. That's what I'm saying.
Definitely.
About that.
Yeah. Dude, I could not agree more. Like, I hate people punching up and I hate people punching down. Like, and it happens everywhere. But I'd really hate when it happens with authors. Like, you get new authors coming through very successful and they start this like bashing on the ones that paved the way. You know what I mean? And vice versa. You know, it can go both ways. You get I'm not going to name any names either, but I have had some pretty bad interactions with certain authors that are pretty well, or were pretty well established. But yeah, it's not a good look. Don't do that. Yeah. That's my writing advice. Hey, be nice to people, especially other writers.
Yeah.
Be a kind person.
Rising tide lifts all boats. Yeah, I spoke with Carolex as part of their, well, being the main publisher of Timeless Wind. Mm-hmm. And they said the same thing. They said, rising tides lift all boats. And there's enough readers out there. There's not enough books. You literally cannot write fast enough for people to read at the speed. Yeah. Right? So, yeah. But going back to the earlier point, let me think.
Which one?
Oh, yeah, the point. No, Maddox is so important and he has like Mai Tais. I don't.
Yeah.
I'm literally like making negative money off of this stuff because I like doing it so much. And it just really feels good. It feels good doing the podcast. It feels good doing writing. And I am honest, I'm not looking forward to going back to my job. I'm on leave right now so that I can write. I'm just taking a sabbatical. But at some point, I will have to go back to my job. And that means, well, less podcasting. That means less writing. I literally couldn't do the stuff that I do if I go back to my job. So we'll see what happens. Because right now, my entire week is completely packed with editing and writing. And then if like some sort of company comes in and wants me to, quote unquote, work for them.
Ugh, companies.
Yeah. So, yeah. And if you don't want that to happen, subscribe to my Patreon.
I was going to say, yeah, you can fix that. You, hey, you, press that subscribe button.
Yeah.
Thank you.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. Again, smooth. Smooth.
Segues. Smooth. Oh, is that Gideon the Ninth up behind you?
Yep. No, it's Lorna. Harrow. Sorry. Harrow the Ninth.
I have terrible internet. I've only read Gideon. I intend to read the rest of them. Gideon kind of broke my heart.
Oh, God. Yeah. Like, I thought, okay. So, Tamsin, you're probably not listening to this, but I thought, yeah, this is mildly interesting. This is really good. Mm-hmm. This is a very forgettable book. And then I got to the end, and I'm still thinking about the end like 8 years later.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
The entire book, somehow, everything was forgettable until the end, and then suddenly everything else was like, oh my God, I need to, like, why is this? Get out of my head.
Yeah, yeah, I couldn't agree more. I literally had this, it was 2 weeks ago. I went to buy my third physical copy of The Name of the Wind, which I know you love talking about. Third physical copy, because I have lost two copies from having lent them out to people, and I've lent them out so many times, and I have like severe ADHD brain. I have no idea where it went. So I bought a third copy, and I saw Gideon the Ninth on the shelf, and I was like, huh, there's a bunch of sequels. Damn. And then I looked up when it was released, because I bought it on release. Like, I remember seeing the original Reddit post advertising and all that.
I read a sampler from a publisher. This was like in the early days of Kindle. I was like, oh, cool. I can read a sampler here. This is free. This is nice. This is really good. I want to read that. And then I bought it on release. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I got it on release and I was like, that was like 2 years ago. I was like, isn't she traditionally published? How does she have so many books out? It was not 2 years ago, but it's still haunting me. It's been almost a decade. Okay. Like,
yeah.
The years have flown by, and it's a very divisive book, very explorative though. I think even the people that didn't like it can admit that, you know, she tried some new things. She got a bit wild with it.
Yeah. And not as wild as she could have, because in the end it is a murder mystery.
Yeah.
And I thought somehow the whole going down into that weird door thing and then coming back out and then going in and out was a bit weird. Like, it felt a bit like separatory.
Yeah, it's like a bit disjointed, but I think that might have been intentional.
Yeah, I think so too. I think I cannot quite appreciate how smart this woman is. So
yeah, it was meant to get confusing, and I was sufficiently confused, Tamsin. Yeah. Speaking of books, though, your boy's got a smooth transition. What's one you love? And why is it awesome? And why is it The Name of the Wind?
Actually, that wouldn't be the book I was calling out. I would call out Leadership is Language by David Marquette.
Hey, I can see it up there behind you.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, we're on video. I guess I already asked about a book on the shelf. Anyway.
We're on video, but Haylock said that he didn't shave. And what was the quote you used?
You know what a bunyip is?
What?
A bunyip?
Nope.
It's essentially Australian Bigfoot.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, it's a mythological creature that haunts the night, haunts the billabongs at night. And I actually don't know much about a bunyip. come to think of it. But
yeah,
that was the comparison that I just made up.
Isn't the Australian national, like inofficial national anthem, actually a song about a guy stealing a sheep and then drowning himself in a billabong?
Yeah, Waltzing Matilda. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the Matildas, the Australian soccer team, football team, you know, sorry, my bad. Yeah, they're called the Matildas. They just came third or fourth in the World Cup. The Matildas, nice. After, you know, the man stealing a sheep drowned himself.
Ooh. Nice.
Yeah. Australia.
Australia. I have to say, I do appreciate the London prison lingo.
Yeah, after I explain it to you.
No, that's fine. Yeah, I'm just having some bit of fun. My German accent isn't really all that bad, so let's skip about the historical implication of my country.
No, we're not going to do that at all.
So books that I...
Yeah, so Leadership is Language.
Yeah, that's a pretty freaking good book. It doesn't have to do anything with a RPG, but I really like reading it. I also liked reading Turning the Ship Around. But in this one, he really explains not why, the general concept of leadership, but literally how do you do that? So what changes can you make in your language when you lead? So that's why I like it. But for fiction and for a non-funny answer, the first book that came to mind was Mistborn by Brandon Sanderson. That doesn't need a shout out. I really think it's awesome. Like the way it starts with the heist with Kelsier. I like the whole like play on the Messiah thing and then the double blind. That was like, I personally still think that Mistborn is one of Brandon Sanderson's best books.
I couldn't agree more. Amazing. Yeah.
I wrote my master's thesis on it.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I wrote about queer hermeneutical interaction in the Mistborn quintology back then. And otherwise, I would... One book series that I really liked was Django Wexler's The Thousand Names.
I haven't read it.
It's a relatively unknown book. Django's a pretty cool dude. I haven't talked to him ever. Like, we're not friends or anything, but he seems like a pretty chill guy. He's one of the few people I actually follow on the space formerly called Twitter. I have no idea what it's called these days. And it's Napoleon's entire career through a fantasy lens.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It starts with this garrison in, well, not Africa, not North Africa, where these people have been driven out by the forces of, well, basically the Egyptian kings after like this like uprising. And this really charismatic leader forces their entire army, even though it's beleaguered from all sides, to march to the desert to find an artifact called the Thousand Names. Mm-hmm. And the first book really isn't that all that magical. It's just like sometimes here or there a little bit. But then in the second and third, it gets increasingly more magical. And basically, he took the French Revolution, Napoleon's life as a carbon copy.
Yeah.
And then it literally goes all the way from Africa to France to Russia and back. It's a really freaking good story. Like, really freaking good. Why is it awesome? Because of the historical stuff, right? But also because the characters are so freaking good. He has this old grizzled war veteran who actually just wants to stop. He has Winter, who is a woman who cross-dressed to get into the army to escape an orphanage. And she got into active duty and now she has to try to keep to herself and hope that no one actually finds out who she is, who she really is. And she's haunted by these memories of, well, something, right? So how can someone haunt you even if they're dead, I think is the tagline that she uses over and over again. And I've stolen some ideas from that book. For example, the flashbacks that I do, I think are loosely inspired by Django. So Django, if you're listening to this, thanks. And if you want to read his books, like The Thousand Names are a really cool book. He also has another book series that's about a badass girl warrior with magical arm blades on a techno-magical cruise ship that goes around and teleports kids onto it to train them into assassins to fight against something. And that's a fucking good book. Like, Django Wexler is criminally underrated.
Yeah, that is a premise. Holy.
You know what time it is? That's right. It's a new ad. And this time I have two amazing stories for you to check out. First one is my friend Saving Throw, who writes a story called So When Am I a Hero? It's a system apocalypse that is quite frankly amazing. I don't like system apocalypses usually, and I devoured that one. So go and check it out. There's a link below the podcast. The second one is from another friend of mine, because I have two friends, called The Infinity Dungeon by Reject Humanity. Premise is actually pretty cool. Guy goes hiking on the Appalachian trails and stumbles into the only and first dungeon in the world, and he's the only person on Earth with a system, at least for a while. All right, go check him out. I appreciate it a lot, and I'll see you next time. Django Backstory is criminal animated.
Yeah, any authors that can do good characters, man, I will forgive almost anything. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I think the epitome for me, I always think of, have you read the Malazan Book of the Fallen? The Steven Erikson, of course.
I read the beginning, it wasn't for me.
Yeah, so also kind of the same. The first book, like, it's so disjointed, and I have a brain similar to yours. Like, yeah, I don't know. It goes, it's all over the place. It's intended to be obfuscating. You're not supposed to feel grounded where the hell you are. You have no idea most of the time. But the characters, man. Oh, my God. The characters. They're beautiful. I don't know how to pronounce it properly, but like Iscariel Past, man, like I forget storylines and I forget books entirely sometimes. I forget, like I can watch a movie a year later, I've forgotten. I still have lines from the Malazan Book of the Fallen in my head from like 10, 15 years ago.
I never forget a plot.
You don't? Damn. Okay. Maybe our brains aren't the same.
Maybe you got the left half, I got the right or something.
Yeah, mine's chaos. It's kind of cool because I could, like, every time I watch something, it's like, oh yeah, it's like a genuine surprise because it's gone.
I look at the thing and I can rattle down the plot, but I like some of the nuances, of course, are lost. I'm not some sort of savant. If I were, I wouldn't be writing what I write.
Yeah. Oh, come on, man. You might be a savant.
I mean, I wouldn't have to rewrite the entire like beginning of Torchbearer.
Right. We would all have to rewrite if we allowed ourselves. Not I'm saying that, you know, Torchbearer.
Give me a second.
What am I saying? You're right.
But that's basically the books that I...
Yeah, absolutely. I actually noted down, was it 1,000 Names?
Yes.
I wrote that down a little, not bad, because that's the way I need to digest history. This is like a total aside, but like I need history to be entertaining. Like, it's the weirdest thing. I find it endlessly fascinating when it's like delivered in the right way. Like, people always go on about like George Carlin's, I forget what it's even called, something history, but like it's just him narrating like in his like, and then they did this. And I tried it. I couldn't. Like, I just couldn't focus. But if I listen to like a comedian like Chris DiStefano, he does like horrible histories and it's just a comedian saying it. But it's so entertaining and interesting and horrific because history is terrible. It's horrible.
You know the meme where it's like me as an eighth grader learning about history? Man, I sure hope that my life will be as interesting someday. Me at 25, it was supposed to be space travel. It was supposed to be space travel.
Yeah. Why is it like this? Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah, the Chinese curse.
Yeah.
May you live in interesting times.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we certainly do, but it's such a weird thing. Like, the times are currently very interesting, but also horrific. But also better, like, you know what I mean? Like, your survival rates for most things are, like, amazing. The fact that I can just mosey on down to the corner store and get anything I need is wild. Yep. Imagine that, even, like, 100 years ago. All right, this, I guess, is the meta question.
I mean, everyone does. Like, I think with the exception of, like, you know, Matt Dinneman, or shout-outs to Honor Ray for basically, you know, descending from the heavens and just blessing us with all the skills. Like, it's... If you're not one of those people... You have, like, I mean, I've written some books, but they weren't very good. And Torchbearer is the first book that I'm actually, like, finishing and publishing. So I'm learning a shit ton here, and I'm mostly learning what stuff I need to avoid. Like, we spoke about this in one segment, right? So make the main character relatable. Give her, like, a real, like, outline and everything. That sort of shit. And I'm going to try my best, and I hope you like it. And if you don't, I promise you at least one more book, maybe two, depending on whether or not someone wants to publish this thing. And if they do, awesome, great. I'm going to promise you at least two more books. And if you want more of it, well, I got way more planned. I did mention the Bernard dog, right?
You did, yes, with a German accent.
Yeah, yeah. Just think about it. Oh yeah, please rubben Sie mein Belly. If you want that character, go click and give me a good rating.
You got to read it. Yeah. That's the kind of promise I can get behind.
Yeah.
And I don't think a few of the examples you gave, the Shodaloon and Matt Dinnerman.
I'm not very humble, am I? Like, I'm going to compare myself to Shodaloon. No, I'm not.
No, I think it was an unfair comparison because they are like they wrote before, right? Like their first books in this genre came flying out the gate, but I feel like they probably made the same mistakes.
I think Shodaloon was a PhD candidate for literature when he started writing He Was Five Monsters. And I know Honor Ray, for example, wrote 13 other books. She talks about it in the podcast episode that you probably have listened to before if you listened to this.
Yeah, I'm so excited to listen to that one. I'm in the past right now. It's not released. It's terrible. It's so dark here.
It's going to release tomorrow as we're recording this because, again, going on vacation. And
do you know how annoying it is for you to be interviewing all these authors that I respect so much? And then you're like, dude, we had this conversation. It was amazing. And then I have to wait like 3 weeks or a month to hear it.
Yes.
You're like, oh, she talked about this. I'm like, okay, I can't read it or I can't listen to it yet. Why are you telling me?
I'm going to actually start releasing the entire episodes without ads and anything on Patreon. So
exciting, exciting times.
You can listen to the entire thing all the way through without ad interruptions.
One more reason to press subscribe and join me. We can talk in the comments. It'll be wonderful. I'll tell you wholesome things. I'll whisper sweet nothings into your ear.
Yeah. And I'm just saying, Void Herald said to subscribe to me. Raven's Dagger said to subscribe to me. And if you're not listening to those people, like, what are you even doing?
Yeah, dude, forget me. Forget I said anything. Listen to those guys.
Accept the apostles into your heart.
Yeah. See the light.
See the light of Raven's Dagger.
Yep.
I still think his name sounds like a cultist name. And then he writes, like, Cinnamon Bun.
Yeah, it comes flying out the gate with Cinnamon Bun. Yeah, that book has a special place in my heart because I was like, mid like wild anxiety breakdown and was like, I need a book. Everything is violent. And then I listened to Cinnamon Bun while I was working and it was just what I needed.
For me, it was He Who Fights with Monsters. Yeah. I was legit in burnout. It was 2020 to 2021. Like COVID restrictions were just getting a little bit less tight. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to fly to Italy. And I just went to Modena and got that audiobook because I wanted the longest audiobook I could find on Audible. And that was actually Here Fights Monsters. So I was like, the cover looks a bit weird. Like, what the fuck is a lit RPG? You know what, whatever. And then I started listening to it and I just fell in love with it so much that I listened in 1 week through the entire first three books, maybe first four if they were out by then. And I just sat on this bench in the Palazzo Ducale.
Yeah, nailed it. Yep. Yeah, as an Australian, I can.
As Australian, sense. Yeah, of course. Italy and Australia are very close together, dear American friends.
Love coffee. We were good at making it.
The Italians would stone you for this.
What?
I think we'll start a new war. No. And I sat there and like listened to all these books, so watching like lizards and ducks, and didn't move from the spot until I got up, got myself one of those like amazing lemonades they have. Like, holy shit, Italy has good lemonade. And ate some fresh Italian food like pasta fresca, had some balsamic vinegar on my fucking like parmigiano chips, and then like not like chips but little chips of like real parmigiano cheese, and then I went back to my bench and sat around for another 4 hours watching the water, and that healed me. So I definitely can see where you're coming from.
See, that's another reason audiobooks have their place. There's some, oh man, I live on the beach, I just walk along the beach listening to an audiobook. I can't do that and read a book. I'll step on a blue bottle or walk into someone that's running. We don't want that. I can just listen to a book, get my little wireless things in, look out at the waves. Come on, man. Like,
yeah, that doesn't make me jealous at all. I live in Berlin.
Yeah, you've got beautiful places. Yeah, you can find even cities, man. I don't know,
artistic places.
Absolutely, yeah. There's still something beautiful about, like, even skyscrapers, right? It's artistic. It's human artistry. It may be ugly if you look at it in a certain light, or it could be, like, a feat of human ingenuity.
Exactly. Although it was good to wander a little bit, to have the sense of wonder, to push yourself into that. We have Tempelhofer Feld. This is the old airlift, West Berlin airlift airfield.
Hmm.
We have that. And it's just like a gigantic airfield in the middle of the city, and no one's ever built anything on it because Berlin would go and batch it insane if they did. And it's like literally several square kilometers of nothing. Nothing but tarmac and nature. And people are walking around there, and they're roller skating on the tarmac, and they're riding their bikes. And because it's so windy, because it was good for an airfield to be windy, they actually have like, they do kite surfing on skateboards there.
Whoa, dude, that's sick.
They do windsurfing, and there's drum circles, and like people like doing weird dances, and people roller skating backwards while listening to loud music. There's drag queens doing fucking like somersaults in high heels, and I have no idea what this place is, but I am there for it.
Yeah, me too. That's amazing. I thrive in chaos like that. I just want to walk through. I just want to absorb all the weird things going on. See, that's amazing. Yeah. You could just literally just exist there, look at things, have one earbud in, listen in a book.
Yeah. You need two because it's loud as fuck, but yeah.
Yeah, true. Especially if you're in the drum circle.
Yeah. Especially near the drum circle. Yeah.
I suppose as the host of this podcast, my inaugural hosting, I can ask you to shout out a smaller story that you like. Or a smallish story. Small's relative. A story.
Okay. So I want to shout out our common friend, JTB, and his story, Son of Flame. It's a firefighter-related RPG. And it's an isekai about a firefighter who, well, gets isekai'd into a fantasy world, and there's bloody conflict and battles, and the guy fights with two like fire axes and throws them, and it's, I don't want to spoil too much. It's really freaking good.
It's got a new cover.
Yeah, it's got a new cover, courtesy of our Midjourney altar.
That's so funny. As soon as I saw it, I was going to ask if it was K, because it looks like a K cover.
K definitely helped for sure.
Yeah,
but yeah. So JJ Hato, Son of Flame, a firefighter lit RPG. Go give it a read. I'm going to link it below the episode. Also, you should read it because, well, JTB used to be a real firefighter, so he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, the best kind of those books or those stories where it's merged with someone who actually knows where they're coming from, and they merge it with fiction. Beautiful. Love it. Couldn't love it more.
The story is lit.
Come on, man. Did you plan that ahead?
No, I'm just on fire.
You put that on me?
What?
Okay, got any more? You got a third one? Something about heat?
I mean, all the other books that I've read recently, people know. Oh, actually, I think by now, isn't Mizar's new story out by the time this podcast releases?
By now? Or release now?
By release now.
Oh, I don't know, man. I've been very far away. I also intend to read JTB's.
Yeah.
I intend to read Son of Flame, I should say. It's on my to-be-read list when I have, you know, when I'm not working 12 to 14-hour days.
We should really read that book. He's going to ask the right questions. But sorry, I am going to bury the hatchet. Yeah, I'm just tomahawking on this thing. Anyway, I can't stop. Someone help me, please. Yeah, but at some point in the future, is it still called Necromunda? Oh, God. I feel so bad because he changed the name of it a few times, and we keep calling it the L word story. But I think actually the story is called Necrologica Chronicles. Mm-hmm. And it has a friggin' kick-ass cover. And it's about an OPMC who got into a huge fight with the love of her life, and the love of her life like put her into the ground so hard that she wakes up like centuries later and decides to take her revenge. At least that's the version that I read last. So I hope you're somewhat excited for this book. And if not, I'm going to write down something in the comments of this thing, in the description of this podcast, so that I give you a better description, because Mito's grown, dude. He's really good.
Yeah, all I know is the story's going to pop off and you should get in there first.
Yes, exactly.
You want your reading and your comment, you want your comments and reviews to become stonks. Okay.
Yes.
You want to cement them at the foundation of this soaring story that it will be.
Get those sweet Royal Road levels with all the upvotes and the rep. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's you all want I'm that. Really in writing for, to be honest.
Yes, like, absolutely.
People ask me if I've always, you know, thought about stories. And no, I've always thought about more points, internet points. It's what I crave.
Internet points, yes.
And exactly. You can get more of those by checking out Ms. I Save Story.
Oh, yeah. And of course, also the other story. You know, the one with the dragon that this guy, Sean, writes.
A dragon. I don't know.
Isn't that on Rising Stars right now?
I think I might have seen something with a dragon on Rising Stars.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. What's it called? Is it called Dawn of the Last Dragon Rider?
Oh, I think it was called Dawn of the Last Dragon Rider, yeah.
I think it's Dawn of the Last
Dragon Rider. I suppose we could shout that one out. I mean, it's only got almost a perfect 5-star rating, you know, 1,400 followers.
Yeah, almost a rating.
Man, it's gaining like 100 followers today.
Yep. It's gaining a lot of followers.
Yeah,
it's flying.
You should check that out.
I see what you're doing there.
if you read Aragorn as a teenager, let me tell you, this story has sounds like an ad read now. I'm not being paid by Sean, but I've kept up with it. Despite my lack of time, I actually haven't read it. I've been having AI read it to me. Shout out whichever app, I think Speechify. Yeah, because I can't look at words anymore. But I've been keeping up with that story regardless because it's good. Mm-hmm. It's dragging me through. You should check it out.
It's dragging me through. Oh my God, you're so good at this.
Oh my God, I don't even realize I'm doing it. And you point it out. You're ruining me.
I don't know. Like I think I just work on a different scale.
Oh my God. It's actually impressive. I can't even be upset at the puns with how effective they are.
It's very good to have brain damage that makes you do puns. It's nice.
It's a feature. All right, man. Well, we've been talking for 2 hours and a few minutes. I suppose I can let you go from my inaugural podcast hosting.
I'm a free elf.
Experience. I guess. I mean, I don't know. I guess you can be productive today or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. You want to go to the gym. So.
Yeah, I do intend to do that, but, you know, there's still time to not.
Do it. Who's going to carry the boats?
You're right. I can't let Goggins down.
Yeah, I mean, you can't let all of us down. Like, when we are going to get all our yachts down to your beach.
You're like, no, who's actually going to carry the boats?
Exactly.
They're going to be big.
I want it to be small, my man. Too small to control.
How do you sign this off? You say, how about, I guess, as the leader of this podcast, I will delegate the task of signing off this podcast to you.
That's not how that works, but I'm not going to go into a diatribe. Thank you so much for everyone for your Haylock and for forcing me to do this.
Anytime.
And please, if you listen to this, you like, you subscribe, you click whatever button there is on the platform that you're on. It helps me a lot and it helps me do more of this content. By this time, I think I've also already released the quest board. So if you're interested in all the upcoming releases for this month, go ahead, listen to that. It's on the same channel on YouTube. And otherwise, I think there should be a few more chapters coming out for the pub crawl, where we talk with all the publishers. So this batch, I think, has Timeless Wind. It has Shadow Alley Press and it has Moonquill. And might even have Aethon again, but this time with Rhett, the owner of Aethon. All right, this is it. Please like, subscribe, do all the buttons.
Yeah, subscribe.
And also Patreon.
Subscribe to the Patreon.
I did give you all my reasons for Patreon. Please, 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 please.
I will talk to you in the comments. We'll have a good time. You can verbally abuse me. I'm okay with that. I might be into it. Not into it.
If you want to talk to Haylock in the comments of my Patreon, please do that. If you don't like Haylock, I wouldn't know why, because I think he's a really sweet dude. But if you don't, you can come in the comments and then insult him there, because he cannot block you there.
No, yeah, I have to take it. It's
And if you want to pay me money to insult Haylock, then you're kind of weird, but I would understand that, yeah.
Yeah, we both understand. It's totally fine. Yeah, money wins. It's, you know, it's what it is.
Please don't insult Haylock. He's such a sweet dude. All right. Thank you so much.
It's okay.
And I'll see you next time.
It's okay.
And I'll see you next time.